Hey everyone, Dr. Tom Moorcroft back here with you for this episode of the Healing from Lyme Disease Summit. And today we're in for a really special treat. I'm joined by a really special guest, my great friend, Beth O'Hara. Many of you may recognize her as the host of the Reversing Mast Cell Activation Syndrome and Histamine Intolerance Summit that I helped co-host. And we just had such great conversations about how Lyme and mold and Bartonella and all these other environmentally acquired illnesses really started to play a role in hyperreactive mast cells and just sensitivity in general. And so I wanted to bring Beth on because her dearth of knowledge is incredible. She's one of these people that I think about when you're looking at completely being able to reclaim control over your health, reclaim control over your life. Not only does she know all the science and the specifics of all the nuances, but she also has this bigger picture viewpoint of things that allow you to actually start taking action right away. So today in our conversation, we're going to talk about Lyme and Bartonella, and specifically their role in mast cell activation syndrome and intolerances and sensitivity in general, but really focusing on those two different parts. The one part is stuff you can start doing right away at home to start making progress. And then the other part is like, what are those little nuanced things that you might not have heard about before that can really, you might be doing right or wrong, and you could ratchet that up so you feel a lot better. So Beth O'Hara, thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, it's a delight to be with you. I'm so excited. That was a wonderful introduction. I really appreciate it. And I'm thrilled about this because one, I find that in these kind of tick-borne illness protocols, we need to start bringing in the mast cell angle. We need to be thinking about this because so many people are failing these protocols, or they're flaring, or they feel worse after them. Some people are getting much better, and that's fantastic, but I'm always focused on the people that keep falling through the cracks. What do we do for them? How do we move things forward? And probably because that's who we both were, you know, and so that becomes our passion. And I think some light bulbs will go on, both for people who are going through this themselves and practitioners.
Yeah. You know, I think that's really the key, is like, we have summits like this and we talk about all these possibilities and everybody sort of starts going, oh, start compare themselves or to another person or compare themselves to a protocol. This is about learning some information, but then going, realizing that you and I see those people who do fall through the cracks. And so a lot of the people that we focus on, it's not that everybody's ultra sensitive. It just happens to be the people that we see, and we love helping them take that next step. But also a lot of the folks, if you're listening, you're like, hey, I'm pretty robust. I can handle a protocol. These are the things that you might want to be thinking about as you're going, so that you don't accidentally end up in the sensitivity category. So whether you're someone who's like really super sensitive, in which case this conversation is going to be all about you getting better, or someone who's really pretty robust, but you want to make sure that you don't fall into that category, this is going to be just knowing Beth and knowing the conversations. So yeah, this is going to be amazing. So, I mean, Beth, one of the things is like, you mentioned that like we were there and we both see these people and we're so passionate about helping them because we were there. Before we kind of dive into kind of like, I mean, one of the things I think you're most well known for is, and this is why I love you, is you have a clear roadmap of success. You have a roadmap of thinking about how to work with mast cell activation syndrome and reverse it. But before we get there, like why mast cell activation syndrome? And why do you care about MCAS and Lyme and Bartonella? Because we all know there's so many better ways to spend our day than focusing on the sickest of the sick. So why are you so passionate about helping this group of people?
Well, it really comes from, because for me, there wasn't a better way to spend my day. There wasn't any other way to spend my day. And I was that person. I was so incredibly ill. And it started when in my childhood, we moved out to the country. So people have heard me before, have heard the story. So I'll shortcut it, just that living in the country, we lived in an old farmhouse that was full of toxic mold, and I was bitten by ticks all the time and mosquitoes. Never thought a thing of it. Back then, nobody knew that one, mold was an issue or toxic, and two, people, Lyme wasn't even on the radar back then, certainly not in a rural area. So this was rural Western Kentucky. So looking back, my health had started declining around age 9. And at the same time, I had a significant head injury. I had a traumatic brain injury. And that opened the door for these tick-borne infections to really start taking hold. So I ended up with Lyme, Bartonella, and Babesia. And I muscled my way through, but by the time I was in college, I was barely functioning and I wasn't able to, I had gotten a full scholarship to medical school and I wasn't able to take advantage of it because I was so ill. I had to turn it down. And it was one of the most devastating things in my life. It's still probably, outside of my health issues, the most devastating event in my life was to watch that dream just go up in smoke, which has happened for so many people who are dealing with these illnesses. Now, back then, I was the sickest person I knew. And going into my 20s, so my late 20s, my friends were still going, they were going clubbing and partying. And I was walking in I was hobbling with a cane in orthopedic shoes. I could hardly walk. I'd have to use the scooters and the grocery. And then I would just feel so embarrassed and I would feel this shame because I could see everybody looking at me like, why is this young person using the scooter? Is she just lazy? Like I could hear the judgments coming off of them, you know, and people would say, you don't look sick. And some people would ask me like, why are you using that? Like I didn't have any right to use this scooter, but this was before grocery delivery. So that was the only way I had to get food. And that was my life. I got to where I couldn't read a book. I was so light sensitive with the lights off in the house during the day. I had to wear sunglasses. I couldn't listen to music, even classical. I couldn't listen to a movie. I could most days barely handle conversation. And it was like my brain just melted down. I had system-wide joint pain, muscle pain, severe GI issues, extreme sleep dysregulation. I have not talked about this much before, but I think it's time to bring it into this conversation. I had periods of psychosis, and that was the most terrifying, was to know that I had lost touch with reality and not be able to do anything about it. And also know that if I went to an inpatient psych clinic, that that would be the worst thing for me and that I would lose complete control. And I wasn't tolerating anything. So I couldn't handle being given psych meds. Mm-hmm. So it was a terrible existence. And I have seen over 75 practitioners. I've totaled up. I stopped counting it. I've probably spent over $500,000 on my health, every penny. And it's not like I've been a wealthy person. So I was buying clothes at the thrift store so that I could spend money on supplements. So I've lived that. And I remember the day that this was functional medicine was new. And I got in with a functional medicine doctor. And he was the most experienced in our area. And I'd been on the wait list for a while. And I got in and I thought, okay, I'm going to get some answers here. And everything we tried made me worse. I would try little quercetin. This was before MCAS even had a diagnosis code. But we knew I had something going on with mast cells. I'd get these flushes and these hives and these rashes and all this stuff would go on. And everything we tried made me worse. It was all these paradoxical reactions, extreme anxiety and panic attacks. Sometimes I'd drive to the grocery. I shouldn't have been driving, but I couldn't afford the supplements and afford a taxi. So, you know, you got to make these kinds of choices. And I'd drive when there was least traffic, so I knew I'd be safe as possible. And I had no proprioception, so I'd run into the curb all the time. My poor car was just like messed up. It was just messed up. And I didn't want to get it fixed because I just messed it up again. And so we'd worked together for like 3 years. Even GABA, a sprinkle of GABA made me more anxious. All this weird stuff was going on. And at least he believed me, whereas a lot of practitioners had told me it was in my head. Mm-hmm. I heard I wanted to be sick a number of times. I'm like, that's preposterous. Why would I work so hard and want to be sick? And they'd say, well, there's something you're getting out of being sick. I'd be like, I'm getting nothing out of being sick.
You're getting pissed off.
Yeah, pretty much. And so at 3 years, he stuck with me. And I remember the day he said, Beth, we have tried everything I know what to do. And we knew I had mast cell activation, even though it was still in the theoretical phases. We knew for certain this was a thing. And I was already starting to study it. And he said, I don't know where else to turn, but if you find something, let me know and I'll support you. But I don't know what to do. And I appreciate his honesty, but that was probably the second most devastating thing that went on in my illness, because I'd put in all my hopes on this practitioner. And it was before telehealth. So it wasn't like I could set up a phone consult with somebody like you or, you know, these other people available. And I sobbed the whole way home. I had such fatigue. It took me a week to recover just from going to that appointment. But then when I got home, I thought, I'm going to give up. There's just nothing left for me. I don't know. If he doesn't know, I don't have access to anybody else. I have exhausted everything: traditional medicine, holistic medicine, homeopathy, shamanic work, psychotherapy. I mean, if nothing else, I'm persistent. And I woke up the next morning after this huge meltdown that I had and realized, I heard this little voice and said, Beth, what else are you going to do? I couldn't sit on the couch and eat bonbons because I was down to 10 foods. I couldn't, you know, I didn't want to sit on the couch.
Bonbons weren't one of them.
I went to sit on the couch and eat carrots. And so I thought, you know, I have this whole pre-med background. I've been learning stuff as I went along, and I'd get these little windows where my brain would turn on for a few minutes. So I just started reading anything I'd get my hands on about mast cell activation. We knew I had Lyme, but I couldn't tolerate anything to hand to address that. And then I stumbled on the mold toxicity. And then I stumbled on the nervous system dysregulation. And I'd had a number of traumatic events and this head injury and all this stuff. And by working my way through things piece by piece and hitting a lot of dead ends and turning back around, I started slowly getting my health back and my brain back and my life back. And then the more I got my life, my brain back, the more I studied. And my recovery was so, it wasn't overnight. But people that hadn't seen me in a year or so, they would see me off the cane and my color had come back in my face and say, oh my gosh, what did you do? And then they started asking me, can you work with me? Can you help me? I'm like, okay, I don't have any qualifications. What am I doing? I had gone into spiritual work and I was working as a spiritual coach and teaching spirituality and things like that. And that was part of what saved me, part of what kept me going, kept me alive. But I became a health coach, and then I realized I needed more. And that's where I got my brain back to go into marriage and family therapy, because I wanted to look at the role of trauma and stress on our health and our immune system. And then went to naturopathy, and that became Mast Cell 360. And it's all driven by this passion of there's so many people out there suffering and stuck. And then that's where the system that we'll talk about was developed, and it's been tested and not tested on, but refined. So a lot of people have helped me refine it. And now we've got this really solid roadmap that works for people who are super sensitive or really robust. It just gives us a way through.
Nice. Yeah. I mean, I think it's so important. It's like so many interesting little points that you bring up in your story. And part of it is, yeah, the psychiatric stuff is real. And whether it's Frank's psychosis or just that, like being left out, you know, it was really interesting. I've been, you know, years and years ago, I saw this study where they checked out, you know, your brain, and they're doing functional MRI, and they had three people in different rooms playing a video game where they would throw the ball to each other. And so after a couple of minutes, the researchers had two people, they signaled to them, hey, don't throw the ball to the other person. So exclude the other person. And then they went and sent everybody the MRI machine, and they found out the areas of the brain that correlate with feeling excluded, feeling slighted and sort of dissed by the other person, and feeling significant emotional pain, as well as areas of the brain that are related to physical pain, got triggered by this exclusion. But what was really interesting to me, Beth, was the other two people were just a computer program. Oh, so wow. There weren't even other people. So it's not just whether the doctor blows you off or you feel betrayed, or whether someone starts making fun of your cane and saying you don't deserve to use it. But even if you think they do. So I think that spirituality component, the trauma stress piece, is like so critical. I mean, like, where do you find that really fitting in with all of this? Cause I know we want to talk about sensitivity and how to get over it and stuff, but I mean, we tend to just go right for the, for the jugular here and go to the real topic.
Yeah. Well, I think it underlies everything. There was a whole period, Tom, where I was so ill that I didn't want to live. I didn't want to hurt myself, but I didn't want to live. And I was in excruciating pain and I couldn't sleep. And then that does weird things to your brain on top of having these kinds of infections going on in your brain and toxins affecting the brain. And I would, and I share this because I've shared this with a lot of clients when they've been in this point, and it helped them not feel so alone, that exclusion they're talking about. Every day I would think about that I'm going to die at some point. And maybe I'll get hit by a bus and it'll be over quick. And it would give me a sense of relief that there was some ending point. But I would always force myself to continue the fantasy to where my husband had to find my body and what, how that would be for him and what that would do if I died. And the reason I did that was because I knew that would keep me from going forward on something if I got to a point where I wanted to hurt myself. And I just wanted to share that with people because this is a desperate situation a lot of people are in. That plays in with the spirituality because it reminded me of how connected we all are and how connected he, not just he and I are, but all of us. And that's what kind of took me into, okay, I'm living this life that's excruciating, living hell. But what's happening in my body is not the only thing happening in the world. And it's when we're that sick, our lives just shrink. And it's like the, it was, sometimes it was that, that was all I could see was this pain, this GI distress, this insomnia. And I started working on connecting outside of myself. So I didn't have the ability to go on hikes or things like that at this point, but I would go sit on a bench and watch the birds and get my focus outside of me just for a moment. And that would bring relief. And in the spiritual work that I did really did carry me through. And also the work I did with other people probably saved me. So I would have days where I'd have an appointment scheduled with somebody, a session. And I was such a mess, Tom. I would sometimes get to the office and realize I hadn't brushed my hair. I remember one time I got to the office and I still had slippers on because I was just really struggling. I hadn't put my shoes on. I'm like, well, it's a slippers day. And then I would just tell them, you know, it's a slippers day, and we just laugh and it would be fine. And then they would start sharing their pain and their suffering, and mine would disappear for a while. It was so interesting. The pain would fall away. The depression that I was in, the anxiety would just kind of fall to the background, and it all had to do with where my focus was. So I had to limit the amount of people I worked with. I didn't have stamina to do a lot, but as much as I could, I retained that. And then I retained this connection that for me, it's about there's something bigger than us, that there's this energy that weaves us all together, that connects us all. And I know there's so much New Age stuff that's talked about in terms of, well, you attract what you're experiencing. So if you're sick like this, you attracted it somehow. I don't believe that. I don't think that's true, because that only works if we're, you know, if we're in a vacuum and we're the only ones on the planet. But we're living in this world where we have all this climate change, which is driving the increase in tick-borne infections. We're getting these new Borrelia species and other tick-borne species every couple of years. And all this stuff is happening. We have this toxicity that affects our immune system's ability to fight things off. And then the mold situation is epidemic and related to climate change. And so we have all this going on that has to do with the destruction that people have brought on our planet, and we brought on ourselves and on each other. And so I realized I'd felt like a victim to that. And particularly because I was so sick, and then other people weren't sick, or the people I knew weren't sick. So why me? You know, then it was like, why me? Why am I dealing with all this? And there was one point where I just had this shift and realized it was when I heard the phrase canaries in the coal mine, that we're the canaries in the coal mine. All of us, whether we're sensitive or not, those of us that are getting Lyme versus the people that got bit by ticks, and maybe they carry Lyme bacteria, but they're not expressing the symptoms, or mold or mast cell activation, whatever. We're the carriers of this message that, hey, this world needs to change. And I shifted from being in this why me victim place to I want to be a leader in this. And then I want to really encourage all of us to inspire and even challenge all of us who are dealing with these things to also be leaders, whether we do it in the way that you and I do it, or we do it by changing our lifestyle and putting in a water filter and teaching our kids why to drink filtered water and why to reduce our plastic and why to not wear polyester and participate in these types of things. Why not to buy regular cotton that's the highest pesticide sprayed crop? How do we do these things that we shift the world that we're living in? And I really sense that we're starting to hit some critical mass around that. There's something that's shifting globally, and it's been shifting globally in the past year or so. And I think this is part of it.
Yeah. I mean, I think like what you highlight is so critical. And to me, one of the most toxic, I think the pandemic was so great at showing how toxic all this shit is. And we do have a choice, and people are starting to go, hey, wait, getting spoon-fed stuff from social media and the regular media outlets without being critically evaluating it. Maybe I don't want to live that way anymore. Maybe I do want to turn off the TV because I'm realizing that everything that they're talking to us puts us in this negative state of mind. And I think the leadership that you're talking about exhibiting, you can choose to say that my life sucks because I got one of these or multiple of these things, or you can choose to say, hey, it is a gift. Maybe the reason that I got it and somebody else didn't is I'm awake enough to actually do something with the message. And I have enough personal responsibility and energy deep in my soul. I may not feel like it every day. Like you were saying, I did a little and then I rested. I did a little. Some days a lot was resting, you know, but when you can be a leader, you don't need to be on the internet. You don't need to be on the stage. Your kids, your friends, your partners, they're all watching you. You influence them so much. And I think this is kind of that leadership that I hear you talking about, Beth, is moving forward and showing people that if I'm in a support group, I'm not going to be like everybody else who just complains about the bad stuff. Like never once right now have I heard you say anything other than I acknowledged I wasn't feeling well, and then I was open to supporting someone else. And in supporting someone else and being open to that, I was able to create space for myself to heal more. So I just think it's just such an amazing concept. Because we all know we're sick. When we are sick, we're sick. We're not going to forget about it. You cannot think away, you know, positive affirmation away Lyme disease and MCAS. If you can, you fixed it and it was a mental thing.
Right.
So yeah, I think it's key. So when we're looking at this, we have the people like who get Lyme and Bartonella, like you said, maybe they have a few symptoms, they get an antibiotic, they're fine. But then there's this other group of people that get Lyme and BART or maybe a mold exposure who end up seeing people like us. And then they come in and we're like, oh, you have Lyme and Bartonella and mold exposure. Oh, and you have MCAS and you're sensitive to 187,000 foods. how does that even, how do we get to that place to start with before we dive into how to actually start to reverse it, you know, using the roadmap approach? But like, yeah, how do we even get there?
Well, I can speak in terms of how we get into the mast cell activation. And just to frame this for people who may not be as familiar with it, when we're looking at mast cell activation, we're looking at these frontline defender sensor cells of our immune system. So they have all these receptors on the outside, and their job is literally to create inflammation and cell signaling and regulate things that are happening in our bodies based on what's going on outside of them. So that can be what's going on in the environment around us because of toxins, because of EMFs or whatever, can be what's going on inside of us. We have some bacteria, some viruses, some parasites that shouldn't be there. And then they're going to release some inflammation to start to localize a localized response and signal the rest of the immune system to come in. They have all kinds of other roles that we won't get into right now, but in a normal healthy response, somebody will have an increase of inflammation and then it goes away. So let's just take, since we're talking about the tick-borne infection world, let's just take a virus, so a cold. We'll take a type of infection everybody's had. And we start to get inflammation in our throat, inflammation in the sinuses. That's the immune response, not the virus itself, but our immune response to that virus. And the mast cells are part of it, not the only thing, but they're a big part of it. And then it goes away, you recover, and you completely even forget. Most people don't remember, oh, I had that cold back in 1993. Nobody remembers that, because you recover and you go on. So that's a normal mast cell response. Or you get a cut, you don't get it cleaned out, there's bacteria in there, it gets infected, you get it cleaned out. Later, you clean out with some hydrogen peroxide, you put some polysporin or something on it, it's fine. You've totally forgotten you ever had inflammation there. You go on. The mast cells, when they have a constant onslaught, can get dysregulated. And that's what we're seeing. And this has become huge numbers now. So pre-pandemic, the population studies showed that anywhere from 9 to possibly up to 17% of the general population had mast cell activation syndrome. That's a lot of people. That was pre-pandemic. So if you think about at least about 1 in every 10 people that you know have mast cell activation syndrome walking around, most of the time, they have no clue. We're talking hundreds of millions of people in just the US alone. Then we have this virus coming along called COVID. And it's a virus we've not been exposed to before. A lot of people were already had low-grade MCAS. They didn't know about it, mast cell activation syndrome, and it tips them over. And these numbers are much higher now. We just don't have the population studies to look at where we are now. But a lot of this long COVID is really can drill down to a few things that are similar in tick-borne infections and mold toxicity. There's all these underlying base pieces that would be helpful for people to understand. And I'm sure you've got people are talking about cell danger response on here. So my really nutshell elevator speech on it, if this is the first interview anybody's listening to on the summit, is with the cell danger response, we have an overwhelming level of any combination of toxins, pathogens, stressors. And we can include in stressors, traumas, but it can just be chronic stress. I've had people who they were working 70 hours a week, and bang, a year into that, they just lost everything with their health. So Lyme, these tick-borne infections are going to fall into that. When we hit that threshold, then we get all these biochemical changes in our bodies. And one of them is increase in mast cell response. The mast cells have a particular receptor on them called the toll-like receptor. And that's their receptor for sensing viruses, bacteria, parasites. So we think about Lyme bacteria, Bartonella bacteria, and then the Babesia. And the mast cells are going to be sensing that organizing response. Well, what if when you get bit by that tick, you already have a toxin load that takes you up here. If your threshold's here, you're already up to here on the toxin load. And then you had a death in the family. Then you had the stress of the pandemic, or maybe you got bit before the pandemic, but you had a surgery or something that felt traumatic, or surgeries are traumatic, even if they don't feel emotionally traumatic. So you had all these things. Now you're at the very top of your threshold, but you don't know it. How are you going to know? Then you get bitten by that tick, and now you're over the threshold. So we get this driver for mass selectivation syndrome, and we're living in this kind of world we're describing, where we have these toxins at levels we've not experienced before ever in human history. We have EMF levels we've never experienced before in the history. We have stress levels we've never experienced before. Just when we think about what your typical day is. And the pandemic was wonderful for me, because I went, why am I running around like a chicken with my head cut off, trying to work and then get out to go meet a friend for dinner and then get home and I've got to finish some reports and then I'm going to get to bed late. And then everything slowed down. I was like, oh, I like this pace. I'm going to try to hang on to this pace. And just like everybody else, I started to lose it. I'm trying to come back to it. But that pace just adds to that load all the time. So then that opens us to this mast cell activation syndrome, because our mast cells lose their fine tuning. They lose their ability to tell what's friend and what's enemy anymore. And then they start over-releasing these inflammatory mediators. Histamine's one. Cytokines are whole class. That's the word most people know now, are cytokines. That cytokine storm has a big mast cell involvement. And all these other kinds, IL-6, all these other things that are getting released. So this plays a role in these tick-borne infections, because you're getting this inflammatory load building, building, building. Then when you kill off these pathogens with the protocols, they're releasing more toxins when they die. Those toxins are triggering those mast cells, and that's going to increase this mast cell response. And this is where people can snowball into more inflammation, more GI issues, more brain issues. All kinds of symptoms can pop up. So mast cells are in every tissue in our body except the retina. So where they're triggered is where we're going to get those symptoms.
So we're not actually
rambling, but I hope that answered it.
No, I think it's crystal clear and very well said. And I would say, like, so from a clarity perspective, it's like you could be doing all the right things, but your mast cells are now seeing the death products, if you will, of appropriately killing Lyme and Bartonella, as an example, as a foe. Now, technically, like, kind of like our higher brain is like, well, no, but it's just toxins from getting rid of it. That's good. But the mast cells are protecting us. And now they've lost that ability to differentiate between friend or foe. So they're just dumping out more pro-inflammatory substances, which is why it looks like, even if you're doing kind of the quote unquote right thing for Lyme, if Lyme were in a vacuum, your overall system can't handle that.
And this is a big part of why, for some people, after they go into a heavy duty killing protocol, all of a sudden they can't tolerate the fragrant smell in the laundry detergent aisle. It's making them sick. They can't handle the smell of fresh paint. They're reacting to foods they've never reacted to before, because that's what I'm talking about. The mast cells lose their fine tuning. So they're like, oh, I can't tell the difference between another Lyme bacteria or a cold virus and a carrot. And so I'm just going to be overprotective and overvigilant. And my dear friend Bob Miller says now they're shooting at butterflies. I think he says police officers. And I think about now we're shooting at butterflies, and butterflies are not enemies. But we have to regulate the mast cells. And this is why I find, before we go into these tick-borne protocols, if we'll do the stabilization step, where we're going to stabilize particularly two systems. So the mast cells on the immune system side, and then the nervous system. And the nervous system, very important to stabilize as well, for a couple of reasons. One, nervous system and the immune system are not separate, like most of us were taught in anatomy. They're all in, it's all interwoven. And the mast cells are the interface. They're lining every nerve ending. They're at every nerve sheath. So whatever's happening in the nerve system is happening to the mast cells, because there's a constant cross communication. They're It's like they're texting all the time, back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. How are you? I'm really stressed out. Oh, I'm going to release more inflammation and to protect you. How are you? Oh, I'm really inflamed. Oh, that doesn't sound good. Let's release more inflammation. Well, that's going to change my neurotransmitter signaling. So that's what's happening. And they get, it's kind of like two people who are trauma triggering each other. Kind of think of it that way. And we've got it. If we're going to calm the system down, we got to calm both sides down. People who have a lot of inflammation, they're dealing with a lot of stuff, and we just calm one, it's not going to work on the other side. We've got to do both. So that's where we bring in the nervous system calming, the mast cell calming, bring everything down a few notches. Then we can stabilize the system a little more with supporting sleep. You don't want to go into these killing protocols if you're not sleeping, because whatever is happening, your top symptoms are going to flare more as you start these protocols. So I like to bring them down, make sure we've got room for some ups and downs as we're getting into those protocols. And then we bring them on board. So unless somebody was just recently bitten, they have something that's acute, that's a whole different picture. Then you got to jump in there and get on top of that. But I'm talking about what we do with people that have been dealing with this chronically for years.
Beth, I couldn't agree more. And I'm so glad you added the acute thing in, because I'm always like, well, if someone comes in with a new tick bite, well, different story.
Yeah.
But the important part here that I really want to highlight for everyone here is what you just said, Beth, is so key. I see so many people, I just need to kill it more. I just need to be on more of this or more of that. And I'm like, no. It's not just knowing what, and you guys have probably already heard this in so many other interviews, and it comes up in almost every one. And there's a reason for that. It's not just about knowing what to do, but it's about knowing what order to do it in. And I think, Beth, you really highlighted one of the core key components of why. And again, everybody's an individual. You don't all have to be like doing it in this particular order. But what I love about the way you talk about this, Beth, is you're like, you're not saying I got to do the mast cell activation syndrome before the mold, before the Bartonella, before the Babesia, before the Lyme in that specific order, unless you have heavy metals and glyphosate, in which case you have to follow a protocol. What you're saying is, instead of looking at the name or the label, I'm always trying to get people to leave the label to the practitioner and then just know the label for reference, but get rid of the label. Tell us about your symptoms. And from a practitioner perspective, you just said, this is me paraphrasing what I heard, focus on the immune system and the mast cells within the immune system, and focus on the nervous system. And like, to me, now we're looking at a human being, because the immune system and the nervous system are like the whole thing. Yes, you have circulation and you have all these other parts, but you're essentially saying, look at the person as a unique individual and then give them treatments that allow them to be able, ready to receive more of the treatment, whether that's physical, mental, emotional, or even spiritual, as we've been talking.
Exactly. And we have to remember that we've got these different branches of the immune system. So to talk about it very simplistically, and I'm going to really simplify this, knowing that it's way more complex than how I'm going to describe it. But if we just think about having our pathogen killing side of our immune system, when we're going after things like Bartonella and Lyme, these kinds of pathogens, we want to have a good, strong activation of that pathogen killing side of the immune system. And the protocols work in conjunction with that. And this is why if people's immune system's not functioning, then antibiotics aren't working. These other things aren't working because they have to work in conjunction. So much our immune system does. Not just we have to kill things off, but we have to have the autophagy process clearing it all out and getting rid of those dead bodies and everything like that. When we get in this chronic mast cell activation syndrome, we have this chronic inflammatory side elevated, and they work like a seesaw. So chronic inflammation goes up, pathogen killing goes down. Chronic inflammation goes up, autoimmune risk goes up. So now we come in and we start adding more to the low, we're actually increasing risk for things like autoimmunity if we're not balancing the immune system first. So this is the real logic to what is going along. And it makes people get through smoother, faster, with fewer long-term effects and issues. It's, and people often think, why are we going so slow? Can't we just jump to it? And I tell them, we're taking the tortoise approach. So you can be the tortoise or you can be the hare, but remember, the hare kept making fun of the tortoise, and the hare kept jumping around and getting distracted and running really fast, and the hare ran off a cliff. Well, once you went off the cliff, you're not making it to the finish line. The tortoise made it to the finish line first. And that's what I even encourage my clients to get a little tortoise carving, put it next to their supplements so they can remember that pacing is what's going to get them there. And this kind of approach. And it's all about, I say, same thing you're talking about. It's about the right things for this person in the right order at the right time. It's the timing. And their symptoms will tell us so much, because a lot of times the immune system isn't ready to pay attention to tick-borne infections. It's not ready to attack that. It's on the mold layer. And then if you get the mold layer out, symptoms will start to shift. And that's why I love to have people do, they just give me a symptom update every time. And I have them keep a very simple 30 seconds a day journal, not a massive lots of stuff, but just, oh, I started getting headaches. I hadn't had headaches for, that wasn't a regular thing. Now I'm getting daily headaches, or now I'm getting internal vibrations. Now I'm getting muscle and joint pain, whereas I didn't have those. So that's telling me the immune system's starting to shift into the tick-borne layer. That's the timing to bring in those protocols. So that's exactly what you're talking about in terms of where's the immune system focus at this point, and how do we work with our bodies instead of trying to just jerk them along where we think they should go? I don't find that approach to be as effective for people.
Yeah, you know, I think it's so key to think about it that way. And I love the tortoise and the hare analogy. I use it all the time. And one of the other things I say for those of us who are adrenaline junkies, like I claim to be, which is really kind of interesting, I find that like I love things that look disorganized, and I love like high stress environments. But what's really interesting about those statements, because one of the things I learned through my illness was to be very cautious, examine what's coming out of your mouth, because what you say to yourself, both with your lips and in your mind over and over and over again, is how you reprogram your operating system, how you reprogram your inner, you know, programming, your inner iPhone, so to speak. I always love the term slow is smooth and smooth is fast. It's a really common thing used in the military, but it's also used in the emergency room and critical care. If you ever watched someone on the side of the road, the EMTs, if you go to an emergency room and you watch a show that's done well, which I don't know how many of those really are, but it looks like pure chaos. But to me, it's one of the most spiritual calming situations. And this is where I come to this. I like unorganized, disarrayed things. I really don't. What we have is we have this background that we call airway, breathing, circulation, the ABCs in medicine. Something's going wrong. We go step by step down the protocol. And then that's like 80% of it. And then when we follow like a pathway, like a roadmap, like you're talking about, Beth, then we can freestyle. And to me, that's that other 20% where we can really make this huge change. But it's all based on the other 80%, which is taking a deep breath and looking at the basics. Because there's nowhere in ABCs in critical care medicine where there's anything complicated. It's literally been the same thing since I started in 1995. There's like two medicines that have changed. Now, when you get past the 80% and you have to start to tweak things to the individual, all kinds of new stuff. But we don't start on the 20%. We start on the 80%, and we do it in the same order every friggin' time. Well, but we apply it to that unique individual. So we might be able to skip around or move around, which is kind of like, but I'm like, everything we do in medicine, we try to like, I find like the establishment tries to make it different than what we actually are doing in MCAS and mold and Lyme and Bartonella, Babesia. It's like, we're all doing the same thing. They just think we're applying it differently. And it's like, this is the old school way that they forget they're even doing, where we're actually looking had a strong foundation in medicine, a strong foundation in functional and naturopathic medicine, a strong foundation in who we are as a human being, and that connectedness that you talk about. That's why so many people are so sick with this damn pandemic. Most of it probably, I mean, I shouldn't say that, somebody's going to get pissed, but well, I'll say it anyway. A lot of what we're seeing as the side effects of this are the side effects of isolation. The infection directly messes with your brain, just like Lyme, to help isolate you. But then we make you isolated. That's the best way to make you sicker for longer. And it, then when we get together, we're all pissed off that everybody's isolating us, which is just more isolating. So if we learn those lessons that Beth has been sharing with us, and we take some of these other examples you've just talked about with the pandemic and stuff, it's like, we want to reconnect in a way where we have that direct human experience, but it's a direct relationship where Beth and I are sharing with each other and with you through our heart. And then we're going, oh, objectively, well, maybe my shoulder hurts, my ankle hurts, and I have some brain fog. And somebody else like, well, I can't eat 6 foods, or I can't eat 37 foods. Oh, cool. So how's that feel to be a human being? And we can all have this unique experience of the same exact infections without comparing each other and supporting each other. And I wasn't even expecting to sort of talk about this at the moment, Beth, but it's just like, I'm so inspired by the way you put the whole thing together. And I just think we need to highlight, it's that connection. And it's about doing your protocol in the way it needs to be done for you. And also understanding it takes some time.
Yeah.
Until it doesn't. And if it doesn't take a lot of time, great. But a lot of people, it does. So just don't worry about it as much.
Well, and it's hard, you know, because when you're desperate and you've felt really sick, and I work with it, I'll say we work with a lot of people, you know, come through our clinic, and we have a few practitioners, and people come in and they're down to 6 foods, and they keep losing foods. So they're like, what do I do when I'm down to 2 foods? All this stuff, all this worry is very real and very understandable. I find when we work the process and just the big picture, of course, then everything is customized. If somebody has salicylate intolerance, okay, then we can't use certain herbals. We have to use low salicylate herbs or other types of supplements. Somebody has oxalate issues. So all that has to be tweaked. How's your mast cell activation showing up? Is it in your gut? Is it in your brain? Is it in your skin? That shifts what you do. But the big umbrella of it, the big framework is that stabilizing the nervous system and the mast cells, making sure we're lowering the overall toxin load coming in. So looking at these overall environmental toxins for people, particularly mold's a big one, but even things like VOCs, things like what's their air quality, what's their water quality, what's their food quality. And then we, when we bring things down a few notches, we bring, pull the mold layer, we peel the mold layer off. There's been a few exceptions where I think they were more acute infections where people needed to jump in that sooner. But for the vast majority of people, I'd say 95% that we work with at our clinic, that's the order we go in. And then at some point, the body starts to say, I'm ready for the tick-borne layer. And our bodies tell us. So if we listen to our bodies, that's really what I want to get across, is it's about that listening. And it's also about us as practitioners listening. And that's key in the practitioner relationship. I've had, you know, most of our clients are, you know, everyday people with everyday budgets, but we also work with ultra wealthy people. And I can tell you, most of the ultra wealthy people take the longest to get well, which sounds so odd. But here's why. They have the money to chase all these quick fixes, and then they backfire. And then they go chase another one, and it backfires. And they go spend $50,000 on this and $50,000 on that, and it makes them worse. And it makes them worse because they're not listening to the timing. And it's not like those types of things don't have any kind of place, but it's this chasing the quick fixes. And when people have the ability to, they do it. And then what could have taken 2 years, now they're on a 6-year plan. Now they've given themselves a 7-year plan. So I want to encourage people to follow, just get that stability, that stable foundation. It's just like building a house. You're going to put the basement down or a foundation down. You're going to build the walls. You're not going to start on your second story. before you have a foundation and walls in place for your first story. You've got to build it step by step. But a lot of people who have the means jump into, oh, let me put an observatory on. Well, you don't have any structure to hold your observatory up. So that it's the nuancing can need a lot of education and help with a practitioner with experience. But the framework itself is not complicated. It's not hard. And it works. It works 95% of the time. We have 95% success rate with the people who stick with it. Not everybody sticks with it, but the people that stick with it and they continue to go through step by step, 95% is huge.
I mean, I think it's so critical the way you point this out, Beth. It's like the biggest thing is, to me, 95% of people get better if they follow directions and they trust their team to be a little more objective. And I really wanted to also highlight, like, I love a little while ago, you said, journal your symptoms about 30 seconds, but that's about it. So not to focus on them, but your body and your brain and your emotions, you know, your heart, know if you're full of crap, right? Like, I mean, if you pretend, if you're like, oh, everything's great in every moment, every way, I'm getting better and better. Yes, that works. And you also need to acknowledge how you're really feeling. But I love the way you're saying, like, just do a little bit so you can start to learn more about it. And then you can give that over to your practitioner who then can tell you what to do next. It's, I find that, like, when people go from one place to the other, they do exactly what you said. Some of the folks with lots of financial means, some mistakes that they occasionally make, which is just like look at chasing the shiny object. So, and I do think it's important, like, and that's why I love chatting with you, is we're both getting information out to the public. We're getting information out to the practitioner, because as you mentioned, the practitioners also need to learn and be mentored in a way that they understand these nuances of how and when to add different pieces to the puzzle. I think it's so critical. So I really appreciate you highlighting all that for people. And for me, like, every time I talk, I'm like so motivated because I hear nothing but hope. But what kind of, like, you know, as we kind of, I mean, we could talk about this all day long, and we have before, but what kind of, like, words of hope and encouragement do you have for people who are dealing with these symptoms? Because as you mentioned, and we all know, probably lots of people listening, it isn't all that easy, right? And it's not like we're trying to pretend it's simple and it feels great. There are those shitty moments. There are those dark times. But yeah, I mean, like, I'm so motivated by everything you've said. But what are, if you had some sort of, like, summarizing, like, because we're all hope dealers here in the summit. That's our goal.
Yeah. And it's really critical. One, to realize that where we are now is light years from 20 years ago. So when I started in this on the patient side, nobody had a clue what to do with me. And I was the alien with three heads that walked into the office. And even my practitioners had never seen anybody as sensitive as me. They'd not seen anybody as sick as me. They just, no clue. Right. What do you do with this person? I don't know. And they just shuffle me off to somebody else. That's not where we are now. So one, unfortunately, that means that the number of people that are sick like this have increased, but it's also our knowledge has increased exponentially. So when I started there, it wasn't even in theoretical phase for mast cell activation syndrome. We didn't have that phrase. We didn't have that word. There was no studies. The research that has come out, the information that's come out, when I look at what Richard Horowitz is doing, and his latest research and his protocols that he published, they're very intense and a lot of sensitive people can't do them, but we're looking at ways, how do we do those with sensitive people now? We're constantly adding to the knowledge base and every year feel like what we know as practitioners expands exponentially. So there's a huge amount of hope. The other is, you know, when I started, it literally took me about 10 years to even find where to begin. Where do I start? And all that time I was getting worse and worse. Now we know where to start with people. We know where to dive in. We know where to get going. So what took me 20 years takes most people between 2 years on the short end for an adult, a year for a child, to on the long end, usually 3, maybe 4 years, if they're out of mold. If we're in mold exposure, it takes longer. But, you know, or maybe it takes 5 years. That's still a whole different world than 20 years. Also, doesn't cost anywhere like what I had to spend. So I had to spend all that because nobody knew what to do. So I had to try out, well, what happens when I do glutathione IVs? Oh, that backfired. That was a bad idea. What happens when I try to chelate metals? Oh my gosh, that was one of the worst. Okay, that was the wrong order to do things in. Now we've got that down and we save people so much money. Now there's still some things we can invest money in, and people who are who don't have a lot of funds, but they have some funds, you have some resources to do this because it's out of pocket for a lot of what we have to do. You're going to get through this. You're going to do it. And then people have more resources. If you'll stop and follow the process, you're going to get through it great.
And you'll have more resources left.
You'll have even more resources. And then we can get better in these shorter amounts of time. And then we can go on to make more money. I mean, I went from having my whole life career completely dashed and no clue what I was going to do when I graduated at 22 from college to being able to build this. I had no idea I would ever build this. I had no clue. There's so much. And that's really my mission, is to get people. And that's our mission at our clinic. I know it's your mission, is to get people, not just to get their health back, not just to get their blueberries back, or getting back to eating, you know, going out to eat with their families, which is all important, but to get people back to their full potential, to get them back to living their hopes, their lives, living their dreams, building what they're here to do on the planet. And then that elevates all of us as well. So it just builds and builds and builds. So that's where the hope is for me. And then we do this and we clean up our environment and we clean up our world that's driving this so that our children or grandchildren get to have better lives.
I love it so much. The thing I'm hearing in my head while you're saying all that is like, I don't want anybody to do what their parents or their friends think they should do. I don't want them to do what you or I think they should do. I want them to show up in the world and show us how amazing they are. It's like the way we raise our daughter. And for everybody, just like you guys, the way we work with people, yeah, we want you better, but we want you better so that we can learn who you really are and you can shine your light on the world and give us your unique gift. So, I mean, that's why I always love having these conversations and sharing this with everyone else. And I am a little guilty of just wanting to have this conversation just so for uplifting myself too, because that's what we do. We uplift each other. Yeah. But Beth, I think you're going to, you have inspired so, so many people today with our conversation. So for when people are interested in learning more about your work and maybe your clinic and all that stuff, how can they find you online and reach out to you?
I just really want to invite people to check out our website at MAST, M-A-S-T, as in Tom, C-E-L-L 360. And we have tons of free resources on there. We have different course options people can start learning. Practitioners, a lot of practitioners use those resources as well. They're written for lay people, but practitioners have gotten a lot out. And if people are looking for help, then we have a clinic, and I'm the clinic director. We have some different practitioners trained in our methods that are amazing. They're doing incredible work. And then I oversee all the cases as well. So we have that available. And people can find us on Facebook and join our Facebook Lives, which are most Mondays. And we have a wonderful community. So we just love to have people join us. And this is how we keep growing stronger.
Yeah. Well, everyone, we're going to make sure that we have all those links on our summit resource page. The other thing is definitely check out Mass Health. It's Mass Health 360 on Facebook, right? Because the Facebook Lives have been part of a couple, and I know we have another one scheduled in the near future, but what an amazing resource where you get to really have a conversation with people who their goal is the same as yours, to get better. It's very much like our Empowered by Lyme community, where it's all about giving you the tools to say, this is my crappy day or my good day, And now this is how we're going to continue to focus on moving towards that, living your goals and your dreams out while having chronic illness and recovering, or supporting someone else that you love. And it's just, your Facebook lives, Beth, are like, literally like, I mean, it's so warming. It's like, I feel like I'm getting a hug when I'm participating or I'm watching as someone in the audience. It's like, so if, guys, if you're just even just looking for some extra love on Monday afternoons, it's a great way to check things out. And Beth does an amazing job. So check out her information. We'll have it all in the show notes. But everyone, again, let's join me in thanking Beth O'Hara for such an amazing conversation. Go check out all our free resources. And Beth, thanks for joining us.
Oh, thank you, Tom. It's an honor to partner with you and get to do this together and just bring the light. I always feel like you elevate me, and it's such a blessing. Thank you.
Well, thank you too. I feel the same way. And everyone, the reason that Beth and I are here having such a enlightening and uplifting conversation with each other is because we want to share this amazing information with you and really inspire you. And like our whole summit, the goal really is to give you the information so that you can work with your practitioner, maybe find a new practitioner who resonates a little differently if you're in the market, but really to give you the tools to understand that so much of this are things that you can do right at home. You can start doing today. You can work on your nervous system and your immune system. And so apply some of these tools, reach out to Beth for some of the resources if this sort of conversation resonates with you. And I want to say thank you so much for joining us and giving us this opportunity to serve you. And I can't wait to see you in our next episode.